Sufferings, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of TFTC. It was brought to you by our good friends at River, the best place to buy Bitcoin. River makes it very easy to buy Bitcoin, to sell Bitcoin. If you want to do that, you shouldn't sell it. They actually have a new thing at checkout if you're trying to sell Bitcoin. Michael Saylor comes out and says, are you sure you want to sell Bitcoin right now? Probably shouldn't. You should DCA into Bitcoin. River makes it very easy. You can set it and forget it by daily, weekly, monthly. If you DCA using River, you're not going to pay any fees on those buys. It's the easiest way to gift Bitcoin with River Link. You set an amount of Bitcoin you want to gift somebody. You create a link. You send that to somebody. You text it to them. You email it to them. You DM it to them. They click the link, and then they can sweep the Bitcoin to their River account or a wallet of their choice. It's a beautiful thing. River builds all their infrastructure in-house. They don't depend on third parties. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. It's where we buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC. Sign up today. You'll get $5 worth of Bitcoin. This rip was also brought to you by good friends down the hall, Unchained. Unchained is here to help you eliminate single points of failure in your custody model. Price of Bitcoin's going up. If you talked about owning Bitcoin publicly, you could be subjected to SIM swap attacks. Had a friend had this happen to him recently where he got SIM swapped attack. They went to go drain his exchanges, got past 2FA, all of that. Luckily, they didn't get his Bitcoin because he has his Bitcoin in an Unchained multisig vault, which keeps your keys offline, and they're always in cold storage. So you don't have to worry about somebody SIM swapping you and stealing your Bitcoin. Unchained also has an IRA product. If you have a retirement account and you want to get exposure to Bitcoin, get direct exposure. You don't have to buy the ETFs. You can actually hold the Bitcoin, take it in kind, as one should be able to do. Unchained makes that very easy. Go hit up Unchained's concierge team. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Learn about all their products, the vault, the IRA. They have a trading desk. They have a lending desk. They're doing it the right way. Unchained.com/consultation. Tell them that TFTC sent you. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're an individual out there who wants to accept Bitcoin as payment, Zaprite is the best way to do that. Go to zaprite.com/TFTC, set up an account, and Zaprite makes it very easy to connect your own wallets. They're wallet agnostic. You simply enter an XPub, connect your LND node, connect your Strike account, whatever it may be, and Zaprite handles the invoicing side of things. You can send invoices, payment links. They have a WooCommerce integration. So if you're a trucker, a rancher, a farmer, a doctor, a lawyer wants to accept Bitcoin as payment, go to Zaprite, connect your wallets, and start doing so today. The best part about Zaprite is they also accept fiat payments, so you don't have to have individual invoicing for people that pay in Bitcoin and people that pay in fiat. You do it all in one spot. You can connect Stripe, your ACH, and you send one invoice, and they can pay in fiat or Bitcoin. It's beautifully designed. They have they have dashboards, analytics, everything you need to hand over to your bookkeeper or your accountant. So again, go to zaprite.com/TFTC. Use the promo code TFTC at sign out, and you're going to get $40 off their annual subscription fee, which is typically $240. So with the code TFTC, you drop that down to $200. Zaprite.com/TFTC. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. Bull market's here. You may be looking to hire as your runway is extended because you have a bunch of Bitcoin on your corporate treasury. Go to Bitcoin Talent Co. It's a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. They understand Bitcoin multisig. They understand mining. They understand the Lightning Network, and they're highly competent recruiters. Andy, the co-founder, started Uber, grew their team from 100 to 10,000. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to go find the best talent in tech, design, banking, finance, whatever you need. They're going to understand your needs, and they're going to go get you the best talent to help us build out the Bitcoin standard. BitcoinTalent.co. Tell them the TFTC sent you and enjoy this rip.
Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Carlinia. Long time coming.
Yeah, man. It's good to see you, Marty.
It's good to see you, too. It's been a long week.
Yeah, my head hurts.
Yeah? Traveling a lot?
A little bit, yes. And a lot of BTC++, you know, nerding out more than usual.
I did not make it over to the conference yesterday, but I did wind up going to dinner with a few individuals who were there, and they said it was pretty incredible in terms of
the turnout
and the depth of conversation.
A lot of people there, so.
A lot of script talk.
I'm feeling bullish, you know. we got a lot of smart people working, so.
What stuck out to you?
I'm kind of in a, you know, very focused mode at the moment, so I'm just doing my thing. But let's see, Arc is interesting. I wish them well. I hope they work faster.
So. Yeah, was brought there?
No, Tierra.
Tierra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or someone was there.
I think it's a very good timing that this conference is going on this particular week, considering the fact that it seems rather pressing to make sure that Bitcoin is as robust, resilient, and permissionless as possible.
A lot of things to build, and I'm glad there's a lot of people building. So, I'm trying to do a little thing, you know, to do what I can in my little corner of the world. And as long as everyone is doing their part, I think no matter what happens, there's can't stop all of us.
Yeah. Let's talk about that, your little corner of the world, before we jump into Simple Proof.
Yeah, man.
Digital Witness, what you guys are doing to help make sure that elections are actually run properly and securely, maybe make sure that the votes are tested too properly. Is that the right?
The way I would say it is lending new, more recent cryptographic tools to an old problem and ensuring Bitcoiners understand that there is this opportunity where there's a consensus algorithm that happens out in the real world that's usually analog, that a lot of people have a lot of really strong feelings about. And so why not, you know, use that consensus algorithm to teach people about this other one that they may not have heard about, or have whatever they've heard is usually the wrong thing, and give them a different point of view and a different touch point, so that we see it as an opportunity to reach particularly normies or pre-coiners or just, you know, the general population with a different message.
Yeah, and I mean, you have a lot of experience this in your corner of the world, so I think to set the stage for anybody who is listening is not aware of what you've done in the past, I think you've done a lot of really cool things, particularly in Central America, El Salvador, Guatemala. A very good advocate for Bitcoin and making sure that as Central America adopts Bitcoin, it is done in a way that is true to the ethos of Bitcoin.
As you know, there's a lot of ways to do it, and hopefully we do it in the best way that gets the most people to get the most out of it in the least amount of time. And my mission personally is to get all 50 million Central Americans to more or less be on the first wave of adoption. So I see it as a race. There's 8 billion other people, and if this little pocket of 50 million is on the first wave, perhaps that turns into the fastest way to get out of poverty. And my enemy is poverty. That's my only enemy. Everyone else is a potential ally.
Let's dive into that. why is poverty particularly your enemy?
So I think, you know, systems and institutions sometimes can be co-opted, and at the end of the day, yes, individuals are the ones carrying out those decisions. And so, yes, there are some very bad apples out there that we should do everything we can to neutralize and ideally expunge off of positions of import. But I think more often than not, at least in my experience, most people are just trying to do a job, trying to get by, trying to do the best for them and their family, and they'd be fine with their neighbors being better off. And in general, when everyone around you is better off, then there are less people that are pushed to the edge and pushed to a point where they decide to do something that's very bad for those around them and destructive. And I think more often than not, when bad things happen, the culprit is probably poverty or some form of it. And at least where I'm from, there's a lot of that. So what is the fastest way to lift 50 million people out of poverty? And in the next 10 years, I think it's Bitcoin.
So you're saying that poverty drives people to a point of desperation, maybe, that makes them have looser morals that would... When money is dangled in front of them, they will.
Well, the other thing in the case of Guatemala, right? So Guatemala, for those that don't know, is next door to El Salvador. It's 18 million people, the biggest country in Central America. And our poverty levels, last time I checked, we were still at around 50% of people are living, in conditions that are... consider potentially even extreme poverty, right? Our main source of economic stability at the moment and for the past 30 years has been exporting our hardworking people to the United States, and they risk their lives to sometimes cross a desert or get on a train, get mugged, raped, murdered along the way, often sending their children by themselves to do this illegal crossing. And if they do make it to the other side, they become second to third class citizens, modern day slaves. And yet, Fiat and the U.S. empire has been successful in telling that person that that is success. If you are working your butt off 7 days a week at three jobs in the U.S. at a hotel or whatever, cleaning toilets, you made it. For most Guatemalans. And I've had people that I work with that suddenly quit and told me, I just can't keep doing this. And every time I can, I try to pay people, better wages than other folks. And you see folks that even in those conditions aren't getting pulled into the U.S., right? What's pushing them out is poverty. I haven't seen the latest numbers, but over 50% of our newborns are malnourished. And for those that don't know, there's a window of about 1,000 days when you're born. For your first 1,000 days as a human being are incredibly important for brain development. Mm-hmm. And if you are malnourished during that period of time, your brain is not fully developed, meaning that over 50% of the Guatemalan population, adult population, has what would be the most appropriate way to put it?
Underdeveloped brain.
Not to its fullest potential. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that creates just problems where even if you could sit down with someone and explain how this new monetary system works, then maybe they just can't understand you because they... literally don't have the brain power to grok something that new. And so the level of challenge that presents is very tricky. And so obviously if any opportunity shows up to be out of that level of poverty, you usually people are willing to do anything. And then of course, just the other consequences of that on a larger scale do end up creating that people who get into positions of power, it's not a meritocratic system usually when you have that much poverty around you. And generally you see hardworking people, smart people frustrated. And, I've got a lot of friends that have decided to, I studied up here in the States for college, and most of the people in my position, from Guatemala who were able to get to a school in the States did everything they possibly could to stay up here. Mm-hmm. I was kind of the weird one that, you know, I went back. My dad studied up in the States. He went back. My grandfather studied in the States. My mother, and they all have. So my family has this tradition of going back to try to, you know, give back, right? Because the brain drain idea. If the best and the brightest leave, then how are you ever going to get out of that poverty cycle?
Yeah.
Now I understand that there's a lot more at play, and, you know, the underpinnings of the entire monetary system is behind generating these forces that are pushing all of these folks away. So I just want to do everything I can to speed up the process of people adopting Bitcoin and understanding it and using it as a tool that actually is helpful in their everyday lives.
So when you went back after college, were you aware of Bitcoin at that point?
Or? No, I wish. I graduated in 2009. So I studied economics and entrepreneurship at Chapel Hill. And, you know, a lot of Keynesian studies. No Austrians. I worked in the region, first in Belize, then Costa Rica, then back to Guatemala. And in 2012, I was working with my dad at a company that he'd started, 30 years ago. And overnight, we were two of the businesses in our family enterprise were added to the OFAC list.
Oh, lovely.
Yes. For those that don't know, it's the Office of Foreign Asset Control, specially designated drug kingpin and terrorist watch list.
Oh,
yes. So,
bad boy.
Kim Jong-un and Osama bin Laden and two of our businesses were on there, amongst other people, of course. And we found out overnight. And I didn't really understand Bitcoin at the time. But that experience, losing a family business that had been built over three decades, employing 150 people, most of whom are probably up here now working in construction, because we were a metal construction company.
It's a metal construction company.
So metal roofing, metal structures, mainly warehouses, mega churches, big coal depots, anything that needs a large roof, we could make.
Yeah. And, how does that end up on an OFAC list? It seems like a pretty...
It's a long story, but essentially it was a mistake. A person showed up to a meeting in 2006 that got onto our company register, and that person 6 years later showed up on the OFAC list. And so anything, apparently some button, and like that person and anything in her web of distrust or whatever that was automatically thrown in, and we found out reading the newspaper, right?
What?
Yeah. And so I reached out to people that I knew from college who worked at the State Department and tried to find out, like, how do you, what does a person do? And there was an email, right? Hello at OFAC or something. So, hello, Mr. Faceless, bureaucrat. I found out today that we were thrown on this list. And as a consequence, our money in the bank, like our Guatemalan banks, weren't cashing any of our checks. And, we've banked with them for 30 years. We were also struggling and, onto like our second bankruptcy that we were working through. So it's like, we don't have money, right? Like if we were drug kingpins, like...
You'd notice.
The banking system knows all of this. Like it's cute how they, Anyway, it took us 24 months. I checked the other day. To finally get off the list. We finally got a response 2 months after we sent the email asking for 15 years worth of audited financial statements, which we promptly had to dedicate our entire lives to, because otherwise all of our financial products or powers were paused. And they took another, 19 months to finally tell us, your businesses are no longer on that list. There was no sorry. I looked it up the other day. I read through the letter, and it's there's actually a kind of a veiled threat at the end saying, we remind you that they have been removed from the list, but the United States Treasury Department reserves the right to add you on the list at any time. Kind of like, yeah. And of course, by this time, all of our competitors had been going around town telling everyone that we were either terrorists or drug kingpins, but definitely not people that you should trust. And, you know, forget the 30 years of honest hard work that we'd been able to build and the fact that we'd built some of the biggest building roofs in Central America. And of course, that, you know, basically a scarlet letter, you know, on our backs that you can't shake. That, you know, went further into debt and eventually shut that business down in like 2018 after 36 years.
I've never heard that story, and it's rather infuriating.
Yes.
So, can imagine it could be somewhat radicalizing, though, and would be a saga that would make someone receptive to something like Bitcoin.
Looking back, I am thankful.
Really?
Thank you, United States Treasury Department and faceless bureaucrat, for, you know, disappearing 30 decades worth of hard work. Because I, you know, you can't unsee something like that. And so the value of censorship-resistant money is embedded into my DNA. And so I want to do everything I can in the rest of the time that I have on this earth to make something else happen, you know, and expose other people to that. And then through that lens, understood much more intuitively why a lot of the problems that we have in Guatemala are our problems, right? And that was kind of my origin story. And then throughout that process, I volunteered in 2011 and 2015 in the election system in Guatemala. You know, as a volunteer at a voting table, I would receive my neighbor, you show up, I give you your ballots. At the end of the day, I count the ballots. And so I participated with other people in counting the votes in front of witnesses. And you know, as this saga is going on, I'm exposed to this process and seeing the proof of work consensus algorithm that is the Guatemalan voting system. And so it helped me learn and differentiate also between proof of stake, right? Of like why proof of work is such a much more valuable consensus algorithm. It allows you to get to the truth as opposed to anything else. And so, yeah, just fell in love with that process and saw it, you know, would try to just have conversations about censorship resistant money or talk to people about what happened to us with our business and you know, get anyone to explain how that makes any sense and why would you trust a dollar if this could happen to you? And yet even that, you know, people that know me and know our family for decades, it's incredible, you know, how even under that, you know, faced with an example like that, you know, most people just gloss over and you know, you explain Executive Order 6102 or whatever, and they just, you know.
Did you see the draft last night? It's like, did you see the game last night?
So it's you know, I'm basically frustrated with all this and realizing, you know, I feel like I have to reach people with a different argument for them to really get it. And in the case of Guatemala, it's also even more complicated because we have a university that's Austrian economics inspired. Mm. It's probably, I think, the only Austrian university in Latin America, as far as I know. Universidad Francisco Marroquín, started by a former student of Hayek, who came back to Guatemala and decided, I need to start a Austrian economics school here with the goal of having the Austrian principles rub off on the conservative elite of Guatemala. And funny joke is that it kind of was the opposite. The conservative elite kind of erased a lot of the Austrian philosophy. Regardless, they had a tremendous impact, particularly in the 90s, where this guy was able to lobby the government and a bunch of politicians to create locks on our central bank. And so Guatemala, you can look at our currency. It's called the Guatemalan Quetzal or Quetzal. And you compare our currency to basically any other Latin American currency, and potentially even all the world. We're one of the only currencies that has kind of appreciated to the dollar. And if it would be allowed to float, we would appreciate it significantly. And we'd fall into kind of a deflationary problem because our exports would be, uncompetitive. And so Guatemala, actually, the central bank intervenes to keep the national currency, down versus the dollar, which is, I don't think there's anyone else in Latin America that happens. But that means that if I'm trying to convince people about the value of Bitcoin, I'm talking to 18 million Guatemalans that have lived in a very stable currency environment for the past 35 years. Mm. And so the sound money arguments,
we got it.
Only now are people feeling inflation because we are essentially pegged to the US dollar. So now people are starting to feel it, but it's not like Mexico or Venezuela or Brazil that have, tons of hyperinflationary periods and it's easier. I had to get more creative, and that's where this comes in.
Yeah. Well, before we get into that, I'm interested, since we have you on the show, how has exported U.S. dollar inflation, where are you seeing it, particularly in Guatemala? Is it similar to what's happening here in the States, see at the gas station, the store?
Yep. Just generalized increase in cost of living. Of course, real estate being perceived as the only store of value that can, keep its wealth. And so most of the economic elite chooses to invest in real estate locally. And so that drives up housing prices when we already have a housing crisis where I think it's something like 70% of people live in what's called under housing or something like that. They have housing, their housing reality is well below where they should, they don't have enough rooms. Most people have large families in Guatemala, and so if they live in a small shack and it's six kids and they're all sleeping in the same bed, that's, you could have a house, but that's still not good. But then of course real estate is being, the prices are being driven up, and so the difference between the haves and the have nots just gets
wider.
And we're already, Guatemala has a long history of a very extreme Gini coefficient. The mm-hmm. inequality is amongst the highest in the world. Guatemala is a very rich country. For our size, we have a lot of resources. We're the energy exporter of Central America. We have a lot of resources, but they're concentrated in a very small, myopic, kind of just stale conservative elite that just prefers the status quo. And so the real estate problems are significant, right? And we almost went into civil war recently because the election outcome wasn't satisfactory to these folks, and they tried to reverse it. And for the first time in about 40 years, the revolt and the protests were the pitchforks were being,
sharpened,
and the fires were being set, and they got the message. They had to. The way I explain it is, Guatemala has had 80 years of the same owners but different management. Mm-hmm. Every so often you just change the manager, and so yay, democracy. But it's the same ownership, right? And so it's been 80 years since it's the same group of owners, and this new manager, the way I describe it is, has a different owner. And mm-hmm. so that process was difficult, and that's kind of what we're here to discuss.
Is this the election that you guys played a pivotal role in?
Indeed.
Yeah. So let's explain simple proof and how it played into this particular election. It did not get enough tick in terms of the gravity of the situation that was unfolding in Guatemala, and how simple proof by leveraging Bitcoin played a role in actually making sure that the outcome, that the actual outcome was expressed and proven.
So in order to get the simple proof there, I do need to give a bit more context, which is Digital Witness. So I lead Digital Witness. Mm-hmm. It's an post-election audit effort. So the idea of post-election audits is don't trust verify, right? Like, all right, there's an election outcome, but if it's a democracy, you should have access to the documents, and you know, you're not sending a starship to Mars. You're literally just counting, you know, it's arithmetic. It's
simple addition.
Simple addition. We should. The reason I have, you know, it gives me hope is if you're able to at least come to an agreement as a society on simple addition, that's the base layer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, be careful. They're trying to say that 2 + 2 = 5 here. So,
well, that's when you know it's completely off the rails. But so, yes, I tried auditing the election in 2019. And that's when I created Digital Witness. The term in Spanish is fiscal digital, but fiscal digital is not what it means. Fiscal is a word for prosecutor or witness. And so digital witness, right? So we're witnessing, or we were auditing the election, and the system produces all of the documents digitally for anyone to be able to verify. However, the trick is it's over 100,000 documents at this point with millions of data points. And so you've got a week to, you know, verify.
Yeah.
That was considered in Guatemala an impossible feat at this point. And so in 2019, my dad ran for Congress. A cousin ran for Congress. They asked for help, and I said, actually, you know, I won't give you money, but I do understand how the voting system works, and I can audit it. And I kind of, you know, love the don't trust verify philosophy, so let me at it. You know, in Bitcoiner speak, let's run a full node on the election. Let's treat votes as transactions and consider an election a block. And if I can get my hands on all the transactions, or then I can, you know, reach the block and do the audit, which is what that is. And so in 2019, the documents were changing and there was this massive problem. And, you know, to my eyes, as a witness to what happened in 2019, I can't see it in any other way of describe it other than the 2019 election results in Guatemala were fraudulent. You know, when hundreds of thousands of documents are changing over a span of 6 days, like, you can't trust it.
And how can you see the changes in these documents?
So because I was working for political parties that had candidates, I had credentials to get access to the back end system that the election authorities was making, you know, public. So there's this very obvious website that you can go in, and it has all the tallies, the bar graphs, and you can go into the districts and you see the numbers, but you can actually also drill into the JPEG files that are the primary source data that feed that. And those JPEG files are pictures from the voting tables where I used to work, that are handwritten by hundreds of thousands of Guatemalan volunteers, you know, simultaneously on election day. So the paper-based system of Guatemala has integrity. All the documents contain all the data, and then they're scanned and put on the internet. Mm-hmm. Great. Except back-end access that I had, where I was looking at the JPEGs, you'd expect it would go from 0 to 105,000, which was the total. It went from 0 to 10, down to 5, up to 20, down to 10, up to 50, down to 20, up to 80, down to 10, up to 100, down to 0, up to 100, down to 0. Now, so I'm literally looking at the database hitting refresh, and that's like the total count of JPEGs is going like that, right? Mm-hmm. And it crashed for, you know, you'd go into the website, you didn't see the data, then it rebooted a few hours later with 100,000. The same happened the next day, the same happened the next day. So you're just like, I mean,
what the hell's going on?
But I didn't have a, you know, fast enough connection or even the, you know, back end tools to download everything as it's happening. So, you know, it's different to witness a crime and be able to give eyewitness testimony than to say, and I had my high definition camera to, you know, take pictures, and then I, like, you know, took out my crime lab stuff and got all the fingerprints. Like, eyewitness testimony is not the same as
hearsay.
Yeah. And so in elections, you can't just make claims, and your opinions about how they stole the elections don't matter. Like, you have to prove it, right? And so I downloaded everything. I created software to try to get the crowd online and, you know, thousands of people to collaborate and read all of this in a CAPTCHA-like game, right? So just getting the data in front of people and asking thousands to input the data. But we failed. Turns out it's hard to motivate people. Like, thousands showed up, but once the results were made official by the election authorities, just volunteers went down, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any way to incentivize them. And so I thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice if there were a way to, provide value for value to folks? And so in 2019, there wasn't really anything to do that. And so I just kind of waited. Oh, and the other thing was, I realized if we do succeed in 2019 and my audit, this, you know, all the product of this work contradicts the election results, technically that's treason. And
your audit is, or the election results?
If you're if you audit and you publish, you know, and your election results based on the documents, and you're saying this is what happened and it's not what the election authority is saying, technically that's treason, right?
The audit is treason.
If it contradicts the election authority, it can be argued that that's treason, as in creating a counter narrative to the Supreme Elections Authority, which is what we call it in Guatemala, that is potential treason. No one's been accused of that yet, but my lawyers, some friends, recommended that we explore ways to avoid that. And the best way was, well, if your audit was based on the official documents and you can prove that you didn't change the official documents, then even if they charge you with this, it means we can then argue in court that this is just what the documents say and it's your documents. I'm just reading them, right? But of course, the challenge there is, if you are in a position where the state is suing you, say in my case, arguing that I am altering election documents in order to create the idea of a different election outcome, mm-hmm. And I'm saying, but these are my documents, one potential possibility is that the state could say, oh no, those are not the documents, these are the documents. And so you have this problem of, how do you trust a set of digital data is the same and cannot morph dependent on whatever the state's new prerogative may be?
Yeah. And so they could produce different JPEGs.
They did over a period of 6 days in front of my eyes. So I figured I can't put them past this. And so what could I use? And so on day six, when they finally published their final version, we had, you know, a friend told me about Open Timestamps. And so for those that don't know, opentimestamps.org, a protocol developed by Peter Todd in 2017.
I think earlier than that. Yeah. I think like between 2015 and 2017. It's been around for a while. You might know better. Maybe you're working with it, so you did more research on it.
The way I'm saying it now, and maybe I'm wrong, and correct me if I'm not, but
it may have been implemented in 2017, but it's an idea he's had for a while.
And it's, the way I explain this is sort of the compromise between money maximalists and data, you know, base users on blockchain, on the Bitcoin blockchain, of like, what's the minimalist use of the Bitcoin blockchain as a database that a money maximalist would be okay with? And so I don't know anyone that's against the use of open timestamps. And I've talked to, right?
I love open timestamps. Remember, you had TweetStamp, where somebody was known to tweet outrageous things and then go on to delete those tweets. You could tag the @TweetStamp and it would hash the data using open timestamps into the Bitcoin blockchain. And you'd have this database you can go find the original tweet after they deleted it.
Yeah. And actually, that's how we heard about it. It's like the tweet stamp becoming a famous, you know, or just a widely used, famous amongst Bitcoiners. They're no longer around. And, you know, if you're out there, come back.
Yeah. We need you.
We need you. That we found out. And we were like, okay, so I've got all, you know, the election authorities are going to give me 100,000 JPEGs. Can I get this on Bitcoin so that I can prove that in the moment when I finally got the authorities to give me this data, I could hash that so I can say, look, like I never touched this. Like it literally went from your hands to my system and it's the same exact files. And so for those that don't know, basically Open Timestamps Protocol, what it does is, depending on how you want to do it, but in our case, what we did was you take one JPEG, you take the hash SHA-256, and then you append that hash to the SHA-256 hash of the next one. And you know, and I'm probably butchering this, so go and read opentimestamps.org for the actual like code. It's open source. And so you can create a long string or Merkle tree and end on your final hash, and then one hash is sent to Bitcoin via the op return function in a transaction. So you pay the miner fee, and OpReturn, I think, even like makes the output unspendable. But also it's optional data for nodes. So if at any point a node doesn't want to keep this data on their node, they can just prune that data. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't force anyone to carry any arbitrary data. It's only nodes that choose to keep this arbitrary data on their nodes who carry it. And so that means that you can have any set of data, that for any contract that you have, anything. In my case, it's potential evidence that would be used by the state to charge me with treason. Mm-hmm. And so hash that, timestamp it to Bitcoin, and now we can get started. Because it means that I can work on hundreds of thousands of documents to read them and figure out what they say without fear that when I come to the conclusion, the state just decides to create another 100,000 documents to say something different. And that's, if you don't have a foundation of reality, of shared, you know, truth, then you can't do anything, right? Then we live in a post-truth world where nothing is real. But Bitcoin is that anchor of truth in the sea of lies. And so that was the backstory. We made a bunch of recommendations to the National Elections Authorities in 2020 in their like official process for modernizing and improving the election system. And some, you know, local nerds found that to be very interesting. And in 2023, they started this company called Simple Proof. And I was in, you know, last year creating the digital witness and getting it ready to work. And I was going to, you know, do my own thing. And these other guys that, you know, I know, decided to build a system and then pitch it to the election authorities and tell them, you remember those guys that recommended that you use this system? Well, we built it and here it is. And not only does it enable people like, you know, me, digital witness, to carry out an audit without fear that we get, you know, charged with treason afterwards, it also means that if a losing candidate of the election decides to attack the election system through artificial intelligence, creating millions of fake copies.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is that how they were doing this? They were essentially either, were they physically writing new documents, taking pictures, loading the JPEGs, or were they just digitally manufacturing them?
In terms of like how the election fraud happened in 2019, remember I didn't like catch them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how they did it, but one option would have been creating and then like artificial intelligence engine and then trying to predict what the voting patterns are going to be for certain voting districts and then getting, you know, the originals and, you know, substituting that with a, you know, altered version that hopefully goes unnoticed because you predicted a pattern, a voting pattern that can get go in unnoticed. Like that's one option. I'm sure there are other options of what people could do at scale, right? But so these folks at Simple Proof they pitched the election authorities, and you know, kind of to my surprise, as a digital witness, I was there ready to do this. I'm logging in to download all the data, and when you go into the website, there's the picture that you can download, but then there's also a very conspicuous orange button that says verify hash. And so you click the orange button, and it takes you to another website that's a different contractor. So you have two different contractors, two copies of the JPEGs, but then Simple Proof not only has the JPEG for you, but it also provides you with the open timestamps file that is created through the protocol that gives you that mathematical proof, right? And so all you need to do, and you know, it's obviously the pushback I get from Bitcoiners is, oh, but this is causing blockchain bloat, right? And no, again, if you look at opentimestamps.org, essentially what you're pushing off the data storage, so the JPEG storage, and then the proof storage onto the user. So if you're a citizen that is interested in making sure that your documents, that you can prove your documents haven't been altered, you just download your own personal copy of whatever the state has produced, and you download the OTS file, which is the cryptographic proof, and you store that offline. Mm-hmm. So it...
Yeah, OpenTimestamps is only putting hashes into these op returns, and then, like you mentioned, use this external system to basically make sure that it lines up with the hash. And so how do you do that with the JPEG? Is it like stenography where you're...
So
they're able to be like,
oh, like to check against.
Yeah.
Well, the easiest thing is you. So you, what we did is we downloaded all of the JPEGs. We had that on our database. And so then we took out, we calculated the SHA-256 of the JPEGs we actually downloaded. And then we checked that against the JPEG, the SHA-256 hash that they're reporting, right? So don't just verify. All right, you're saying these are the hashes. Well, I went in on election night. I downloaded absolutely everything. I took all the SHA-256. And the first thing we did was then compare those SHA-256's databases to one another. And so it's a very simple, fast way to quickly determine have any of the, in 2023 it was 125,000 JPEGs. Are any of those SHA-256 hashes different? And to my great luck, they weren't. They were the exact same. So I was like, oh, okay, so they're not doing that, right? They're not deciding to change anything. We can rely on a finite universe of JPEGs, which are 125,000. And so then it just becomes a, you know, OCR problem, an optical character recognition problem of grabbing each JPEG and extracting the handwritten data and turning it into a database, and then comparing our results against the official results to see if they match. And so to do that, make sure to cover our bases. So the election authority did that, and you know, I knew something amazing. I mean, something was going to happen. It was going to be a good story. And so I have this other friend, a great friend that I've worked on film before. And so we were documenting all of this. We were interviewing people in Guatemala. We were interviewed Peter Todd. And so we created a short 16-minute documentary called Immutable Democracy that tells that story. Just the specific story of, wow, the Guatemalan National Elections Authorities used open timestamps in real time on election night, published it to the press, very proudly claimed to everyone paying attention to the election and voting system in Guatemala that everything in the Guatemalan voting system in 2023 is immutable. And they used the word inalterable, which is inalterable, but you know, immutable, I think, is a better translation. And so that's the first thing that I invite people to see if they're interested is Immutable Democracy on YouTube. It's free. Or you can go to film.simpleproof.com. That's where I, you know, partner with these guys to, you know, contribute to what they did by telling their story. And so Then we began with the auditing work, which is...
things get interesting.
Yes. So there I was very lucky to stumble upon Stackwork. And Stackwork is a lightning company in the Bitcoin space. Check them out. They provide hyper-growth solutions to people. So if you have a problem that you need to do many times, they can help you out. And essentially anything that you could potentially get someone to do on their phone for you, you could work with Stackwork to do and have it, do it hundreds of thousands or millions of times. And the Stackwork workforce can do the work and earn Satoshis and get paid through the Lightning Network. And so I was just like, this, I can't believe a Bitcoiner already built the exact solution.
Shout out to Paul Toy.
Thank you, sir. I met them at the Human Rights Foundation event in Miami, and they just liked what we were doing, and we partnered together. And so we started working over a year ago to just figure out how to do this and train all of, because they also use AI on a bunch of things, and just get it ready. And so on election night, and actually a week before the election, we were already opening it up to people and inviting them to join us and practice. And so a week before the election, you could log in to a website, the digitalwitness.io website. You just put in your phone number. We sent you an SMS with the link to Stackwork and your unique user. With that data, people just clicked on it, put in their user, and stepped into a space of Stackwork where they got a tutorial just teaching them how to do this. And basically, we're able to see snippets. When I say handwritten digits, it's literally like someone at a voting table wrote down 100 votes to Marty and 20 votes to TFTC and 30 votes to Sugar, whatever. And so you have to look at the data and turn it into digital data. And so you could do that on a phone. And so we were inviting people to come in and practice on the 2019 election. So I used the fact that I never finished the previous audit, but I had the JPEGs to just expose people to it and start getting practice runs and just tell them, look, on election night, be ready. Just practice before. And so then on election night, we just put everything in and started doing the work. And we were able to audit all 125,000 documents of June elections within a two-week period.
Holy shit.
Yes. 70% of the data was read by machines, combination of AI, OCR models, open source models that more than willing to share with folks if you're curious. And then the 30%, which was about, ended up being millions and millions of jobs that were done by people on their phones. And we marketed it to young people. Basically, you can't vote, it doesn't matter. You can audit, right?
That's powerful.
I mean, for whatever magical reason, when you're 18, you can make this decision. But if you're a 15-year-old and you're a 16-year-old, I don't know. I was conscious and aware of all the propaganda and there's all these young people that are exposed to the conversation around elections, and yet they can't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. But give them a phone and get them auditing, and it turns out they can do that much better than all the boomers. they'll work a lot on their phones. And so we marketed to young people and also anyone that had concerns about the election. Let's call them election deniers, which is don't mean anything by it, folks. But so also, you doubt the elections, we do too, right? We don't trust, we verify. Come and help us do this. And I have a hard time imagining two better populations to bring into Bitcoin than folks that are distrusting the voting system and young people. Mm-hmm. And so we exposed them. They did a bunch of work, and we never mentioned anything about Bitcoin. It was just, this is a point system. This is a way to keep track and see who contributes more, because that's all it was to us and to Guatemala. However, because it's within Stackwork, then folks that choose to learn about Lightning could turn those points and redeem them for Satoshis.
Mm-hmm. How do you, just curious, how do you remove potential bias of the human workers?
So sure.
Do you not show the candidates just the numbers?
We try to obfuscate as much of the data as we can so that people are only looking at numbers, but that was kind of hit or miss. Really, the best way to do it is when a user came in, we had a series of control jobs, so basically jobs that we already knew the answers to, and we have a threshold of the amount of errors that you're allowed to make before starting to do real work, and then you also have a threshold of how often you give a person another control job to test them, and they're indistinguishable from one another. And so if people try to game the system, or what is more often the case, my boomer aunt that's like, oh yeah, sweetie, I'm gonna help you out, and it's like, I tried going in, but your technology, like, your thing doesn't work, sweetie. Like, it's like, no auntie, it actually worked perfectly well. Thank you for confirming that we don't allow, fat fingered people that can't follow instructions on a cell phone. And so, avoid getting garbage into the data. And like, the cool thing about how Stackwork works is you can like modulate all of that. So like, if you have enough people, you could bring the level of trust that you require from users up or modulate it down, and even then segregate users into like elite users where like really gnarly problems you get them in first, and things of that nature, that just allows you to work with data in an incredibly powerful way, right?
Yeah. I imagine you send the same picture, JPEG, whatever, to thousands of people, and it's like, all right, if 90% are giving a particular answer.
Well, and so, the consensus algorithm for how do we accept the data was, so the machines would read it, and so it was, if two different machines agreed on the same, on the data being the same, then it was accepted and put into the database, depending on the, 'cause machines give you a certain confidence interval as well, and so you can set gradients there. But then we also set a manual threshold of, if a number is above us, two sigmas of so a large number, because if they're going to steal the election, the easiest way would be to get in, try to squeeze in hundreds of numbers here and there. And so anything above, I forget the exact number, anything above a certain amount always gets verified by humans. But that way you're like, the small amounts don't, you're not losing time on that. And then the human verification is, at least what we decided upon, was two people had to reach the same conclusion. If they don't, then a third. And if the third didn't, we just pass that on or put that into another pile of unreadable to decide after the fact if the unreadables, needed its own process, like, so much data was unreadable that we need to come up with something different. And actually there wasn't, like in the end, that wasn't a good enough model where our numbers were allowed us to reach, precise conclusions. And so that was it. And so we ended up doing about 8 million jobs in total. 50% of it was done by Guatemalan users. 50% was done by like the global audience that works within Stackwork, so that we had, the ability to move and you had distrusting Guatemalans doing the data, so the data is useful, but then also you had people who didn't care about
impartial
people. And so the best thing that I was happiest about was, we're comparing a 3.2 million data point database, and it was accurate, or it matched precisely to the election authorities database on 98.3% of all cases.
Holy shit.
So it worked, right?
This is powerful.
It worked. And so, yay. Which meant, what happened in 1.9%, right? let's hone in on that. And that's the, you know, one of the really powerful things about elections is if you've got such, you know, the amount of data that you would need to sift through is so large that what you need is a filter, right? You need to be able to find the signal and leave the noise, right? And then be able to say, these places are the places that you need to focus on, right? Because if you're just spending all your resources on the entire thing,
you're looking for a needle in a haystack.
Exactly, right? So we've created a magnifying glass that finds needles in haystacks. And yeah. About 8 million jobs done by, you know, about 1,000 Guatemalans and about 1,000 people around the world. And we paid out over 1.2 Bitcoin.
Holy crap. Yes. This is powerful. This is the future. This is the story I needed at the end of this week. After everything that's going on, everybody's got their heads down, worried about what's going on. But what we can build with this, the incentive systems, the cryptographic systems, the verification that comes from that cryptography, it's very powerful. And so with that in mind, like, again, 2 weeks, like, how profound of an improvement is that on the process prior to implementing this?
People considered this to be impossible in Guatemala. Like, literally, they would say, it's not possible. Don't even try. I'm hopeful that, new generation of young Guatemalan entrepreneurs, would-be technologists, understand the impossible is possible if you study Bitcoin. And two, it is so what simple proof did doesn't make election fraud impossible. It makes it much harder. You eliminate 99% of the attack surface, which in the case of 2019 was 6 days worth of, you know, doing whatever you want with the data. Mm-hmm. To you now have essentially, you know, on election night. That's all you've got. And so if you're going to take the risk of trying to include altered JPEGs, well, you don't have 6 days to find, like, where you can do it without getting caught. You have to take the risk of, all right, let's just do it. And so, when people are, instead of having 99, a large attack surface, you have a very small attack surface and you force them to act quickly, people make mistakes. You know, when people are rushed, people make mistakes. And so it doesn't mean that it's impossible. It just means that it's extremely hard. And in our case, it's the outgoing government lost, like I said, the old ownership class and the management class lost the election. The new management and ownership won. And in that transition, the outgoing government weaponized the Justice Department and accused the election authorities of election tampering, right? And for the first time in our democratic history, invaded the election authority jurisdiction, which legally in Guatemala, the only authority that has jurisdiction is the election authority, and they are part of the judicial system. And so what is another part of the judiciary doing coming into and invading the documents and ripping them out and taking them? Which, they broke the custody of the election documents, meaning that now no one trusts anything because the documents, the physical documents, have been manhandled and literally thrown around. And so even if months later the justice system says, here's proof, it's like, well, but you broke the custody of the documents. You
tampered the evidence.
Exactly, right? And so I don't know if they planned on it, but that does mean that the only evidence that is untampered is the evidence that's on Bitcoin. So now the election authority is facing an election tampering argument by the Guatemalan Election Crimes Unit, are using the information on Bitcoin to prove that the elections were not tampered. And that just, the Justice Department revealed their evidence publicly in a press conference. And so what they were claiming happened is when you go into the metadata of the JPEG files, the date created field of the JPEGs, out of 125,000, there were 700 that were created prior to 6 p.m. And though in their mind, proving that election documents were created before the vote count occurred, which was extremely concerning. And I wasn't expecting that. And we, you know, looked and poured over everything, and it's in my report. What we found was that even though there was this small portion of documents that could potentially have been created prior, at least according to the metadata, which metadata wasn't on Bitcoin and is alterable. You know, metadata is not as reliable as other data. Regardless, it does say that. But then also when you look at it, there was something like 40,000 documents that were created the day after the election, like 12 months after the vote count. And when you compare that to the information that's on Bitcoin, that means that following the Justice Department's logic in the evidence they're presenting, it means that that metadata or those documents were created according to their metadata in the future when compared to the timestamps on Bitcoin. And so the Justice Department would have to present evidence of time travel in order to prove their logic. Or the more, you know, plausible explanation was, if Bitcoin is saying this, what other patterns are in the data? And what we revealed as the places that have those problems with the metadata are all in the same voting centers. And so basically those machines that were used in those locations were misconfigured in their time zones. And so the machine thought it was in the Pacific Island or in, you know, Africa. And that's why the JPEG file contains the wrong time. But because Bitcoin was used, the election authorities had the ability to disprove this. Had Bitcoin not been used, they would not have had any way to prove that the election tampering argument is false.
Holy shit.
So, the court proceedings haven't begun. The election authorities first decided to just leave the country for 4 or 5 months. These are, you know, four of the highest ranking justice magistrates in Guatemala. Like, you have the equivalent of our Supreme Court and a few judges, and then there's these guys. So it's like the weaponization of the Justice Department against the Guatemalan election system pushed the, you know, some of the highest judges in the land to flee the country preventively. But they actually decided to come back in February and present themselves in court, and proceedings will begin. And these kinds of cases take years, but we'll eventually see whether or not a discussion of cryptography and open timestamps and Bitcoin happens between a judge and the Guatemalan justice system. And so I'm very concerned for Satoshi Nakamoto, because the Guatemalan the Guatemalan justice system might issue an arrest warrant against him and, you know, beg some explanations. So, yeah, it's been a wild ride. And so our audit, we finished it in March of this year. I did FOIA requests, so Freedom of Information Acts, to request access not only did I have the 2023 files, but I also went back in history and asked for everything. I got everything as of 2015. So election authorities had a tragic boating accident in 2011 and 2007, and, you know, they just, you know, forgot all the...
We don't have it anymore.
Yeah, we don't have it anymore. So, yeah, my message to people that care about elections is go get access to the files before they disappear, because they disappear. And so then the audit was not just about this election, but the previous two, and comparing them. And so we published it, and it's had a ton of recommendations, because my goal is to come back in 2027, our next election in Guatemala, and make the Guatemalan election the most transparent election in the history of humankind. That is my promise to Guatemala. I will try. I will die on that hill. And
are you worried that you will literally die on that hill?
I hope not.
I hope not.
I will take extreme precautions to avoid that outcome. Basically, where we go next with this is I'm the only one that was able to run a full audit. no one else had all of this behind.
It was impossible.
That's according to folks. And so I don't want people to have to do everything that I did. And so my recommendations, I mentioned 70% of the data was read by machines and 30% of the data was read by humans, and it cost us 1.2 Bitcoin.
It's relatively cheap.
Yes, for sure. Like
at the time, what was Bitcoin at? Like probably
30? 30.
30,
yeah. Which another caveat is when I come back, I'll remind people of that, particularly about the high scores, because it's essentially gamifying election audits. And so Digital Witness is an arcade. You can go to digitalwitness.io, our main page. You can find a little arcade, like what you used to, you know, if you ever went to an arcade and you saw that the first thing you see is the high scores. Mm-hmm. And so our top 10 users are high scorers, and number one earned 383,000 satoshis, which
it's like $120.
No, like today price is like 250.
250, yeah.
But so it means that every 4 years I get the opportunity to remind all of Guatemala how much Bitcoin was worth in 2023. Mm-hmm. And so one of my ideas is let's use the fact that democracies happen usually on a kind of 4-year timetable, which mm-hmm. just coincides with the halving cycles, right?
Yep.
To remind people, right? Let's turn democracy voting systems into the 10,000 Bitcoin for pizza moment, mm-hmm. but for everyone that cares about democracy. That should make it easier, you know, when I come back in 2031 for the 2031 election, 2035, 2039, my goal is by 2039, everyone in Guatemala is, you know, hodling Bitcoin.
Sufficiently orange-pilled.
Indeed. But so, of course, I don't want to, like, the people that support us don't want to, you know, won't be able to keep investing, you know, 1.2 Bitcoin every time there's an election. So the idea is, how do we bring the price down? What we do is our recommendations in this report are geared to how do we go from, instead of 70% of the data being read by machines, 99.9% of the data can be read by a machine. And so the goal is to bring together an open source crew of engineers to publish code that would allow anyone to essentially download all of the JPEGs, so the election blockchain, and then download this software where they can chuck in the block and it would spit out the results running all of, you know, the open source OCR magic, so that anyone that is willing to download 120,000, 150,000 JPEGs, which will probably run you at about, you know, I don't know, like 200 gigs, 300 gigs. So anyone that's willing to download about 300 gigs worth of JPEG data and then learn how to run open source software that can read that data could generate their own audit.
They can verify themselves.
And therefore, because there were a lot of people that tried to audit, like on social media, a bunch of people became viral, kind of like how we did it in 2019. So there's an appetite to do this. But now we're going to say, here's the open source. It's all here. Click these buttons, learn how to run the software yourself. And with a few friends over the weekend, you can audit the entire election running open source software. And so everyone that gets to the end zone will then get prompted to download a Bitcoin client and learn about how there's this other open source community where you can download a few hundred gigs and you can run an audit every 10 minutes of the entire financial system.
You're a great man, Carlino. Holy shit. again, like I said, I think the coverage of what happened in Guatemala, particularly Digital Witness and Simple Proof's participation in that, I mean, it's profound. Not well understood how profound it is by the public yet, but I think
I'm to be honest, happy that it is, and kind of unhappy that I need to become a little more well known. But the reason that I am more than happy to pop my head on is because so there is going to be an election later this year. 7 months from now, six months.
That's the one question I had. Does Dominion voting have anything to do with your elections?
Oh, in Guatemala?
Yeah.
So there was an effort about 8 months before the election in 2023 in Guatemala to remove our paper-based system and replace it with some type of e-voting system. I think it was Smartmatic. Mm-hmm. For those that don't know Smartmatic, they're the Venezuelan voting system company.
Yeah, very reliable.
That ran most of the Latin American voting systems over the past 30 years, including all of the Venezuelan elections, at least up until the last one, because the last one they decided to say no. But anyway, so there was a contract to hire these folks, Smartmatic, for I believe it was $80 million that they were going to get for the contract and remove all the paper-based system. But fortunately, a lot of people in Guatemala fought back, mm-hmm. and they were forced to cancel that contract and go back to paper.
I think paper is the way.
It's the gold standard. It's the Bitcoin standard of voting.
Now that you can audit it easier, there's no... Like, I would love for us to go back to... I'm not going to get into 2020 election conspiracies. I will say, waking up in the middle of the night and seeing that jump, is that me asking some questions? How did that happen? What's going on? I think paper ballots that are audited by individuals, load up the JPEGs, attest the data, or hash the data into the blockchain, then attest the data later. Makes the most sense.
What'd you call it, like summation arithmetic? Or
Addition, simple addition.
Simple addition, right?
Simple addition.
Yeah, simple addition. It's not rocket science. There is consensus between computer scientists that paper ballots are the way to go. The weaknesses are the compute of how do you process all of that so that you can get results fast enough. And that's how we ended up in this e-voting, thing in the 90s, of course, with computers being, anyway. E-voting took off, and what I will say is something that a lot of people don't understand is that the United States has 50 states, so it's still a federation, and there's still competition between states. Each state has the jurisdiction to decide their own election law. Mm-hmm. And then, more often than not, and I'm not like super expert at this, but what I'm told and what I understand is that the actual election authorities who are charged with implementing the rules of the protocol set by the state legislature are the county clerks. And so there are about 3,000 counties in all 50 states. So that means that there's about 3,000 election authorities that may be faced with the same issue that the election authorities in Guatemala faced in Immutable Democracy. And so often, those folks are just, hardworking, honest people that care about their community. More often than not, boomers and Gen Xers who,
feel a call to civic duty.
Yeah. And they don't really know computers and technology. And, maybe they've got an IT guy, and I hope that. I am sure that there are many folks in that hot seat that every day that gets closer to November means less sleep at night, more cold sweat running down the back of your neck, thinking, am I going to be the county that, for whatever random reason, come November, the tornado of nonsense and the, clown world decides to thrust me in the spotlight, and all of a sudden I'm going to jail, I'm in the hot seat, I'm the one that's getting accused of having tampered everything because the wrong person lost, right? Mm-hmm. And so the reason I'm popping up for air is I invite people who have any interest in their local communities, and especially if you know your local county clerk, maybe went to school with you know, them or, you know,
their son, their daughter,
their neighbor, and just tell them about this. Ask them, do you have a plan for November, come November, if for whatever reason the, you know, whirlwind that can be this, the world nowadays decides to, you know, the eye of Sauron descends upon your county and you get thrust, offer them this shield. You know, it's the, you know, Gandalf standing on the ledge, you know, you shall not pass, right? Just stop the madness, the slow creep. And, you know, it's cheap. It's not complicated. It's reach out to Simple Proof. They I'm sure they take inquiries. Reach out to me on Nostr. I'm Digital Witness. We can walk you through it. But it's basically these folks, there's cryptography out there to be able to differentiate fake information on social media and wherever from original. I don't want to say necessarily true, but official. Mm-hmm. And so, at least in our case, this ended up being an important piece of how the outcome was protected. And I'm not saying that all elections are carried out perfectly, but because if election tampering had occurred, this would have exposed it, right? When I downloaded all the JPEGs, if there were a bunch that had changed, I would have been able to say, well, these changed, you know, and I could pinpoint to it, and the system logs would have showed which user had gotten access and changed those JPEGs, right? So we could actually find the specific individuals that decided to, you know, do something bad and destructive for whatever reason drove them to it, instead of just creating a scenario where everyone's just pointing fingers at each other and we don't know what's going on, and it's a matter of narratives as opposed to a matter of objective truth. And so there's 3,000 opportunities to get this into the hands of your neighbor and give them a shield to protect against an onslaught that's inevitable. And, you know, at least what the election authority said in Guatemala is, wow, it's cheap. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, if you can protect against some madness like that, it's very cheap. Like not having, needing insurance and not having it is much more expensive. And so my message is, wouldn't it be nice come December of 2024 that Bitcoiners could credibly make the case that the Bitcoin blockchain through the Open Timestamps protocol protected elections in small local governments? And if we are able to do that, then I think we can credibly make the case that Bitcoin protects democracy. And if Bitcoin protects democracy, then if you're against Bitcoin, you seem to be against democracy.
You're fascist.
And yeah, at the very least, it is a use case that's objectively like clear, and most normies can get it. And instead of fighting us against, you know, money and, oh, it's all just a collective illusion or whatever the arguments are against.
There's no intrinsic value.
There's no intrinsic value, really. It's, you know, it's not heavy enough. Versus if it's about just mathematics and cryptography and the ability to differentiate artificial intelligence fake from real, that's pretty objective. And so if miners ever get attacked because they're doing all these mathematical functions for, you know, no reason, well, here's a reason. Hmm. And
do you like your elections to be to have some integrity?
Yeah.
Would you like that? Maybe you should let Bitcoin survive.
Exactly.
That's right. You're letting Bitcoin survive. Maybe you should stop fighting Bitcoin as hard as you are.
Exactly. And so, my message is, I think a lot of Bitcoiners have given up on democracy.
I'm one of them.
I won't tell you to believe in democracy. That's up to you. And what I am saying is, it's an democracies provide an opportunity to farm more Bitcoiners. You can depend on another voting, you know, season, like you can pretend, like it depend on the sun coming up tomorrow. And let's just see it as an opportunity to reach people with, it's an educational touch point about how Bitcoin's consensus algorithm is superior to what we have in this world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Could you imagine the point at which, let's imagine a world in which this is widely adopted, mm-hmm. and the only way to manipulate an election is to reorg the blockchain. which even then, like, who knows if that is even effective.
It also kind of means that Bitcoin has an inherent advantage over other blockchains, because why would you use a less secure blockchain? Why would you use a proof of stake blockchain if you can use the most powerful proof of work?
And to be clear, we're not storing votes on the blockchain.
No.
Storing hashes that prove that something happened at a certain point in time, that a number was
existed
at a certain point in time.
Yes, I'm doing this because I want to have paper ballots. I want to protect the proof of work consensus algorithm of paper that Guatemalans have, which is, it's beautiful. It's something. It's the only thing that I've ever been proud of of being as a Guatemalan, is when I'm there at my voting table and I'm with my neighbors and I, meet other people and tell them, look, 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah,
and we all agree.
Way it's going here in America, you may be called a blasphemer for saying 1 + 1 = 2. curious, two things.
Yeah.
In the audit, going back to 2019, 2015, did you find any statistical divergences between?
Plenty.
Yeah.
Yes. It's all published here. It's basically, so every time we vote, we have six different elections and types of elections, because then you have the small and local government. And so basically, what we found is that in the case of Guatemala, the national presidential election, which is that first line that you're looking at, is green. So we did not find, unless the JPEGs cannot be trusted, which in the case of 2023, the odds of that are, you'd need to prove time travel. So on the national scale, those elections, because they're so big, have the benefit of large numbers. But it's the small elections, the local governments, the municipal elections in certain municipalities that for some reason, math just doesn't check out.
So in,
I prefer you not point them out, to be honest.
Okay, we can take that out.
No worries. Yeah, well, potentially, yeah, not a bad idea.
We'll take that out.
Basically, what it means is the national election provides cover, so that everyone's obsessed on the national scale, and so no one's paying attention to the small places. And so, yeah.
Okay.
It's all out there. It's just more being specific about it is potentially dangerous. But we put it out, and that's the thing. It's, you can get away with, it's the whole bait and switch, right? It's like, oh, look, shiny object. Don't pay attention to what's going on here. At least that's what's happening in Guatemala since 2015. So if we paid more attention to local government,
which is arguably when it's most important, because it affects your local government, affects you the most because you live in that locality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you're asking about, Dominion or e-voting in general. I wouldn't say a specific e-voting system provider. I hope to put together a plan that would allow us to get the help of Bitcoiners, offer some bounties that we can, basically offer some amount of sats so that we can answer certain questions about all 3,000 counties, because I think we can systematize exactly which counties are most likely to benefit from this.
And swing counties.
Well, so Again, this is not about the
National. Okay, it's not about the presidential. It's about the local.
It's about identifying the counties where either county clerks are Bitcoiners and want to work with us, or the system that they are charged with. So the election law has certain characteristics to it that are more similar to what we experience in Guatemala, basically paper-based systems with, an audit trail that is eventually scanned and made available for anyone to verify. How can we identify within the 3,000 counties that exist in the U.S., which ones those are in the shortest amount of time, and identify who we would need to sit down with to share this information and invite them to use this shield to protect themselves so that we can reach out. And because, some people will say there are specific counties that everyone knows about. There's one particular in Arizona that people always mention. I don't think that's the way to go. It's like, you don't want to, Clown World thrives on drawing a lot of attention to places that have problems and blowing it out of proportion, right? So that we forget that there's all this good in the world still, mm-hmm. right? And that's how they get you to hate your neighbor, essentially. I want to take the opposite approach. I want to go to the places that are awesome, and I want to make sure that they have the tools and to defend themselves from the slow creep, right? Yeah. Let's protect, let's empower, let's ensure that those communities that are thriving continue to thrive.
Yeah. And also not only prevent the slow creep, but create a somewhat of a forcing function where it's like, hey, they're doing this, why aren't we? And
exactly. Yeah. If you empower those communities that are thriving with, hey, they are on the gold standard of voting, which is paper-based, blah, blah, blah. But the arguments used to be, oh, but you can't, it's impossible to audit in real time. And so we can, well, no, it is possible. We just did it. And so you eliminate the arguments that allow for the slow creep to go in. And so you make those communities shine so much that it just forces, if other folks want to go down, with the ship and you have at it, man. We're going to go over here.
Yeah. This is awesome. Damn. I'm sitting here like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? if this is widespread, not only at the county level, federal level, whatever, then what do you think this could mean for the world? That forcing function we just talked on is a very micro level, county pressuring others, but you can imagine this gets enough traction, enough people adopting this technology, could be demanded by anyone voting in any election around the world.
Well, I'll say two things on that. The first quick thing is, I can tell you what it means to me in Guatemala is now I can speak to people that are in the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch in Guatemala who understand that something serious happened and that Bitcoin is an important and powerful tool to protect against state-on-state violence, mm-hmm. right?
Inter-cabal squabbles, if you will.
And so when I go to talk to them about the importance of Bitcoin, their brains are open, mm-hmm. right? And something was able to kind of pierce the FUD armor that has been slowly built around it. And not just with, potential decision makers in government, but also in the private sector and just with my neighbor or my uncle who's like, oh, you're still in that Bitcoin stuff that's just, scamming everyone. It's like, all right, did you listen at all to what happened to the elections? Like, we're still a democracy in part thanks to this. And they have to, that didn't happen in fantasy land. Mm-hmm. And so it's making my job or my interest in talking to people about this in a curious manner easier. And the second thing is, this isn't just about voting. I want to live in a world where if I ever decide to do something that might piss off the state, like I did, Where I am concerned that the state might counter sue me or sue me based on lies, that when we get to court and the justice is on the other side, and you know the bureaucrat that is ticked off at me is the plaintiff presenting bullshit, that I can say, but you know, here is my record of things, and my record is timestamped to before that nonsense. And so assuming the person in the justice cares about mathematics,
truth,
and truth, then they'll throw that out, right? And so I think, you know, in my case, it was in the voting system, right? But there's plenty of other cases where for public records, for, you know, anything that has to do with the state will maintain the monopoly of being the oracle. Right? They have the ability to decide what is true, right? When you do anything with the state, get a driver's license, buy a house or whatever, at the end of the day, you're going to rely on a state-issued something or other, right? Mm-hmm. And so that receipt, that proof, we should all have the ability to say, all right, you get to be the oracle, and you get to decide what's true and et cetera, but what you don't get is the ability to change what's true after you've said that. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what simple proof is saying. And in Guatemala, we're already seeing, so there was an interesting thing that happened in Guatemala. We did this with the election system, and within, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the executive branch changed and the new government took office, once the outgoing government realized that they weren't going to, you know, be able to change the election, wouldn't you know it, the IT guy at the finance ministry that ran the cloud and the databases turned up dead. Ooh. And all of the database went down. And so now, you know, years and potentially decades of financial information of the Guatemalan state and of all of the contracts and everything that the state has been paying is gone. And so we have this unique example of, you have the election authorities with an immutable record that is able to prove, and then you counter that, or you compare that to the fact that the Ministry of Finance lost all its database. And so if the incoming government ever tried to make a corruption case against, you know, public officials that stole money, there's no evidence to prove it, right? Or at least the primary evidence is gone. And so people are opening up to the argument that wouldn't it have been nice for the, you know, finance database to be immutable as well?
Have simple proof.
And just allow any citizen to download the database every day. And so, yeah, you could disappear the IT guy, which it's like he was killed. Like, I'm sorry for his family. And I mean, it's just
terrible.
You know, it also means like if the databases can't change, well, IT guys won't be on the chopping block. this is for your own good, IT guys. Like there is this situation now where, you know, decades ago you might have had to like blow up buildings and set fire to stuff, and that happened too back in the day, but you know, you've got witnesses, you've got paper flying all over the place. Now you just need to off one guy and poof. Right. So, you know, the juxtaposition of this is, you know, a little bit, too, you know, the cognitive dissonance for some people in Guatemala is too much to bear. And so we're hopeful and very optimistic that this will lead to the use case in elections and the need that the state has to protect itself from itself gives us a chance to prove the use case. And then we can expand to other registries so that in the future, every time you interface with the state, they get to decide what's true, but you keep that, and that can't mutate, right? Mm-hmm. I want immutable record keeping, and you know, it's mildly, you know, equal footing between individuals and government. So,
holy shit, that you can see it forming. See it begin to form.
Why not? I want to give it a shot. The slow creep seems impossible, but
it's. I mean, I didn't say it on air, but I said it earlier today. It's darkest before the dawn. Whether it's Guatemala here in the U.S., what's going on? Whether it's in regards to Bitcoin, in regards to this looming election later this year. Let's be honest with ourselves, freaks. Things are looking pretty gloomy. a lot of desperation, a lot of helplessness, a lot of hopelessness out there. There's examples like this, what you're doing at Digital Witness, what the Simple Proof guys are doing. It's like, if you look, if you squint, if you look in the right places, there's good happening. We are winning in some regards. Small wins can add up to winning more broadly. And this is what we need. I needed this small win this week, Carlino. Thank you for coming to the studio. It's been a long week.
It's my pleasure, man. I just need your help finding more people and counties everywhere.
A couple of ideas what we can do. Yeah. We can get this in some hands, in front of some eyes and some ears. This is an episode that will be sent to some people I have connections with. I have a lot of connections, freaks. Okay. I'm kidding. And in all seriousness, I do have a few people in mind who I'm going to text this to that may be able to do something with it.
And reach out, please. Digital Witness on Noster. We got canceled on Twitter back in 2019. And so never allowed back. And Simple Proof also got canceled in 2023 because Bitcoin in elections kind of sets off a bunch of alarms, wouldn't you know it? I'm on Noster at simpleproof.com if you want to reach out to those guys. Digitalwitness.io, Immutable Democracy. Let's go.
Let's do it. I'm excited. Optimistic.
Thanks,
man. Reinvigorated. Carlino, thank you.
Thank you.
Peace and love, freaks.